If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's going on in entertainment and popular culture. I'm Jonathan Hederle, a counselor, critic, and according to Dave Verhagen, a sarcasm all-star. Now, Dave has fled the country, and he's visiting European nations where a name like Verhagen would blend in. So, and the next time you hear him on this podcast, he'll be joining us remotely from the new Southeast Psych office in Nashville, Tennessee. In his place, we have joining us today, Craig Pullman. He's a psychologist that specializes in learning. He's written or contributed to several books on education and pop culture, and he also holds the Guinness World Record for the biggest head ever.
Huge head.
Welcome.
Unbelievable.
I'm glad we could create space for you to join us here.
You're happy to have me.
Yeah, we are happy to have you. How's your summer been? What's been a highlight of the summer for you so far?
Oh, I had a great family road trip. I think we drove about 17,000 miles up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
Wow. And you may have enjoyed it, but how did your kids enjoy being in a car with you for that long of a period of time?
Road trips these days, family road trips, they're totally different than when I was a kid. I mean, I used to sit in the back and have to, you know, do things like use my imagination and color. I mean, the first leg of our road trip, we went from North Carolina all the way to New Jersey, and the guys watched the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
That's awesome.
All they did. Yeah. It's a film festival. That's what road trip is to the boys. It's a film festival.
That's fantastic.
I flew out to Seattle to visit family this summer, and during the 5-hour flight, I watched movies on my laptop. I watched episodes on my iPad, and then I watched stuff on my iPhone as well. So yeah, travel is really just brutal nowadays.
That's sad.
So, it's a great way to catch up on content.
That's right. And Frank Gaskell, one of our regular panelists, is here. He's a psychologist, author of the Max Gamer graphic novel, and our resident insane person. Frank, normally you're worked up about something. Is there anything on your mind this week?
Yes. Yes.
Well, do tell.
Last night, I cut the tip of my finger off with a grater for carrots. I think it's called a mandolin.
Okay.
So then today I went for a salad. And I saw the carrots and had a little PTSD about it. And they couldn't stitch it together. They had to cauterize it, which means burn it to make it stop bleeding. So I am against grating things and carrots going forward.
Are they going to be able to save the finger, or are they going to have to amputate it, replace it with a carrot?
The top of the finger actually went into the garbage disposal.
Makes me think of Age of Ultron. You need to get in that machine and get the android tip of the finger.
That'd be awesome.
On there, yeah.
So now with
vibranium.
With the tip gone, it looks like one of the worms in Dune.
Yes. And it's, oh my, Hederle, it's just the tip.
Just the tip. And if it went down the disposal, basically the Sarlacc pit took
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's all types
it's
of...
good reference.
Yeah, there you go.
It does look like Dune.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that everyone's here. Each week, we follow some interesting stories of psychology and pop culture, and we call it Being Human. The first one here we want to talk about is how, believe it or not, internet trolls are even more hostile when they're using their real names, according to a study. And oftentimes people assume anonymity is the breeding ground for bad behavior on the internet, but recent research says that, contrary to those expectations, commentators with the harshest words during mass public attacks online are more likely to be name identified than the ones that comment anonymously.
I think it's a really interesting article, and I didn't expect that to be the case, because I've always assumed anonymity will cause people to just sort of, you know, say whatever they want. But the more I thought about it, and I went on Twitter to some people who I know are very vocal and they're using their real names, it's like a status thing, and it magnifies their personality. They get both more hate, but they also have their followers. So it's sort of like, I'm proud to be me and be a jerk and just bring it on. I think it's a different kind of person that's willing to do that, who I think inherently is probably more aggressive.
This story made me think of the famous Stanley Milgram punishment experiments. And
which is
that the more distant you are from the victim, the more malleable you are to authority to even inflict harsh pain, really severe pain. And so I do wonder if with social media, you may use your real name and your handle, but would you trash someone if you're standing right across from them? And that's one of the things that Milgram found. Like one end of the experiment was you had to actually, as opposed to being in another room and pushing a button to inflict pain, you had actually had to hold their hand down on the hot plate. So
that'd be a cool study to look at tweet locations and distance. If people in New York are trashing Brexit more than somebody in London's trash, I mean, that'd be fascinating.
Or it could be just the total breakdown in civility. Like, we just don't care.
Right.
We'll just say whatever.
Well, yeah. And even if they give your name, if you never have to face that person, still, like what you were saying, Frank, if it's a lot of ways, it's attention seeking. Mm-hmm. You can't get the attention if you're anonymous. So you want the emotional reaction from other people.
Right.
And they need to know your name. They need to follow you. And they need to kind of...
Which is not the case when I play Xbox, though. Because if you do that on Xbox, you get banned. So I anonymously...
You anonymously do it there.
Make fun of 10-year-olds who play violent video games.
Well, moving on. This next article and study looks at the psychology of why Americans are afraid of historically low crime levels. So Pew Research indicates that since the early 2000s, every year a majority of Americans surveyed have felt that crime has increased from the previous year, regardless of the fact that the reality is America is getting safer and the national crime rate is about half of what it was at its peak in 1991. And so a Brooklyn College sociologist named Alex Vitel speculates that people have very little direct experience of crime, and so their perceptions are mainly shaped by news media and entertainment.
Yeah, the other angle here they didn't mention is social media, and along with that, just the ubiquitous devices that we have to access information. So, I mean, time was, you didn't get your news until you had your hand on the newspaper, or you turned on at 5:30 the local news. So you'd go like a whole day, maybe the radio is on in your car, you go a whole day without knowing what's going on. But now people are on their devices all the time. And so on your Twitter feed, on your Facebook homepage, you're gonna get updates about what's happening. So there's just this flow of information. And then that goes into some of the stuff they talked about in this study about news channels and news outlets just going with the sensational stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to a lot of things we've said when we've discussed fear and sharks. It's that line from Jaws where somebody says, Barracuda, huh, what? Somebody says Jaws, or somebody says shark, and it triggers your emotional brain, which cannot think. And it's that fear-driven response. When you see that stuff, the stats go out of your head. You don't care about numbers.
Well, and I remember growing up the newspaper. I didn't really watch the news much, but I would read the newspaper, and the national section was just as large as the local section. Mm-hmm. And the local section really focused on human interest stories and what was going on positively in your community, profiling people and things. And national was where it was headlines and a lot more of kind of conflict around the world or things along those lines. And it was really easy at that time to distance, like, look at all the good stuff that's going on in a community. Oh, something happened bad, but it's far, far away. But now if something gets circulated and you see it 5 million times and then a similar story happens thousands of miles away, but before you know it, it just starts to feel like it's actually so personal and close, when in fact, not only is it not, it's they're taking something that has a very low probability and turning it into like, you're next.
There's another brain-eating amoeba victim in South Carolina. So therefore, I will never go in water again, ever.
So way to prove this study.
You're not going to grate any brain-eating amoebas into a carrot salad.
We might as well freeze you in carbonite because you're going to do the same amount of living.
I would love that.
I think we all would too. All right. Well, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. We'll be back in just a moment with our trending topic.
Available now from Hero House Books. Mixed Shrinks, ridiculous real-life stories from shrinks. Have you ever wanted to read funny stories from a bunch of shrinks? Well, neither have we, but somehow it made it into a book. And it's a great book, too. Shrinks share some of their funniest true-life stories, and we've got some doozies. It's Mixed Shrinks, available now at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon.
We're back. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our trending topic for today is Harry Potter. Now, unless you live under a rock, you've heard by now that Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is a two-part West End stage play written by Jack Thorne, based on an original new story by Thorne, J.K. Rowling, and John Tiffany, and it was released on July the 31st. And it is just the beginning of a resurgence of all things Harry Potter. The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is the first of an upcoming trilogy of films based on Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, one of the companion books to J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter series.
Well, that was Pokemon Go.
The film will be released November 18th of this year, followed by a sequel in 2018 and a third installment in 2020. So the first question for all of you is, how big or little of a Harry Potter fan are you with regards to both the books and the films?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the books. Films, not so much. Actually, what I'd like to see someday is the BBC to create a television series. So each season is a book and they can really take their time and elaborate on anything. But yeah, I absolutely love the books.
I love the books, but I don't love Harry Potter stuff as much as I used to. Like, I think it's the influx of all the Star Wars stuff has like moved that out of my head. Okay. But I read all the books and I cried at the end. So yeah, I mean,
yeah. I'm really conflicted about this stage play that's out now. And for, I'm going to read it for sure as soon as my 12-year-old finishes the copy that we purchased. But I don't have a problem with Fantastic Beasts and different entries into the canon that are more backstory based, that go back in time before the Harry Potter saga, or sort of like stuff that was happening during that time. But I guess I don't like knowing where the story goes. It was such a perfect ending. And if I just relate this story, I read the whole series with my now 12-year-old son. He was 9 at the time. And we would read the books in parallel. He had my set, I had his set, or whatever. We each had our own set. And but towards the end of each book, I would read to him, so we get to experience the climax together. And someone here at work, we have a lot of Harry Potter fans at work, gave me a bottle of butterbeer. Mm-hmm. And so Josh and I shared this bottle of butterbeer as we were finishing up Deathly Hallows. And it was such a perfect ending of that book. And that last line, all is well. And we finished the butterbeer, and Josh stood up and walked over to his bookshelf and put the bottle of butterbeer on his shelf as a keepsake. I mean, that to me has to be where it ends.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot about what this book's about, and I'm very intrigued by the story. I think it would make an amazing, amazing movie. But as a play,
Movie's probably coming.
Well, I would love to see this on screen. The special effects would be out of control. But I will also say this: it's a ripoff of Star Wars. This story is just—it's a ripoff. I can't live up to my dad. It's just
my twin sister that I kissed.
Right, the twin sister. There's this guy named Vader. No, I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's, I don't know. I hope there's some interesting twist to it, but it feels like, well, yeah, of course, this is how the story would go.
Well, and I think Harry Potter is really, first of all, I've not read a single one of the books. I'm the only
what?
One.
What?
I'm only the only one in my family that hasn't read them multiple times. So my wife and both my daughters, I believe, have read each book multiple times. But I'll tell you what, because I'm a fan of some of the movies, but as an overall film series, I think they're hit and miss. But going down to Universal Studios in Orlando and going into the Harry Potter area and Hogwarts,
that was amazing.
That to me, just to immerse myself in that. So I'm not a big reader, but to visually step into that, to me, I think I'll get as close to ever getting why it is so huge for the rest of my family, who
Hogwarts.
Are much more.
Hogwarts is ridiculous.
The books are an experience. I mean, Rowling, she created this world that goes forward and backwards in time and is geographically diverse, and all these characters, and you feel like you're inhabiting this other existence. So that you get a feel of that at Universal Studios.
Now, there's been a lot of book series and film series that have popped up since the original Harry Potter book was first published in 1997.
Jeez.
And the first book or first film came out in 2001. Now, some series like The Hunger Games we might consider to be smashing successes, while others like the Twilight series, the Percy Jackson series, or the Divergent series we would consider very much mixed success.
What, are you going to hate on Twilight?
Yes.
Now, however,
none of them
reached the heights in our pop culture that Harry Potter did as a universe with characters and stories. And I'd argue, and Frank will appreciate this, I'd argue that you'd have to go all the way back to the original Star Wars trilogy to find a singular universe that had such a cultural impact that Harry Potter has. And so my question for you all is, why do you think Harry Potter had such a profound impact on our culture that even continues to this day?
Well, here are two thoughts. One is the stories and the characters appeal to really all ages. You can be a very young reader and enjoy them, and you can be an adult. They're like Russian novels. So you've got
Dostoevsky is popular among children.
That's why Harry Potter is appealing to adults, is that they've got the complexity of a Russian novel in terms of characters and plot and storylines. Kids like the magic, adults like the backstories. All right, dude, stay with me. Okay. Eyes here.
Okay.
So, I think the other thing is the themes are universal. I mean, yes, Frank, you can argue that some of the stuff is ripped off from Star Wars, but there's some archetypal stuff
about
father figures and family love and first love and all that. So,
sure. I think Harry Potter will be around in 100 years. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's another part of it is, like, you've got your Star Wars universe, you've got a Star Trek universe, and you've got a Harry Potter universe. There may be others, but it feels like those are the big three that have impacted our culture and will endure for decades. And I look at those as three different brains. You've got your sci-fi fantasy adventure. Then you've got your logic. It's got to seem real and futurist, realistic. And then you've got this fantasy thing. And for me, I'm not a fantasy type person. But I remember driving past the movie theater and I saw all these people dressed up in Harry Potter clothes and I like screamed at them, nerds, losers. And that was before I read the books. But oh my gosh, I just thought, what idiots. And I'm the guy that dresses up for Star Wars to get in line for Star Wars. So that like struck me that there's real different parts of the brain that get turned on.
That struck you how hypocritical
stories.
You are.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. But like Star Wars is real. Harry Potter's not.
So that's interesting because I actually think Star Wars and Harry Potter are both fantasy. Now, I don't think Star Wars is. I think Star Wars is more fantasy than science fiction. And I'll just tell you, my data point here is my wife. Okay?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
Jen,
yeah.
She hates science. Her own words, she hates science fiction. She loves fantasy. She loves Lord of the Rings and she loves Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But she can't get her mind wrapped around Star Trek.
Right. I think there's definitely a fantasy component. But if it didn't have spaceships and robots and planets and star travel, I wouldn't have cared about Star Wars. It's got to have that element.
It's got to have that for you.
Yeah. Well, you throw in a bunch of dragons and little pixies and stuff like that. I'm thinking, okay, we're watching the movie Legend, which was great, by the way.
Well, when you think about some of
we're
those...
We're going to go mano a mano. There you go.
When you think about some of those book series I mentioned, the first thing that separates it is nobody challenges the fact that the Harry Potter books are wonderfully written books, like just in terms of literature and writing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think back to, in some ways, reading has sometimes taken a backseat to special effects and just, the prominence of cinema and film and capturing people's imaginations. Harry Potter was one that they left a lot to the imagination, but what they provided in text was well written to where in 100 years you talk about it, it's still going to be around. It's going to be taught in literature classes.
For sure. Yeah.
Where some of these others aren't. And so it hits on all these different quadrants.
That was the one, other than I guess Lord of the Rings, that was the one book series that I could read and visualize. And then when I saw it, that was what was in my head. It's the same thing with Lord of the Rings. A lot of movies can't do that, the visuals, and they at least did that. I'm not a big fan of the movies, but they nailed that.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think they're just truncated. You know, right. you can't get an 800 page book and do it even at, 6 hours a movie if you split it into two parts.
Mm-hmm.
BBC miniseries. That's
a great. That is a great
Harry Potter idea. And the Downton Abbeys. Now let's talk about the psychological richness of Harry Potter for a moment. The series has actually been the subject of numerous books, studies, and college courses exploring the different aspects of how the wizarding world can explain our experience in the real world. In fact, there was a 2014 study published in the Journal of Applied Social Psychology that suggested that children and young adults who read about the struggles of stigmatized groups in Harry Potter had less prejudice and better attitudes towards actual marginalized groups in the real world. And so what do you guys think of that? And what other contributions do you believe Harry Potter has made in the field of psychology?
Well, I think we need to be kind to all house elves, really. That's the number one takeaway.
It's a good thing this is not a video podcast.
I love that kids are exposed to this early. Because it's those early learning and the early stories, social stories that you can get out of these books that can last you. So part of it is just indoctrinating them early. But I feel like it's sort of the same way I use Star Wars, at least in therapy, is there are all these metaphors mm-hmm. about how to overcome things when you're excluded or bullied or not being a bystander. I mean, that's how I use it therapeutically, but I don't know much in terms of what the research shows.
Yeah. I mean, Frank, you've talked a lot and written a lot about Anakin Skywalker. His downfall is his anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And you take a look at someone like Voldemort. He can't, like Anakin, he can't let things go. So, and because of that, that leads to these fears and he makes all these really horrific and cruel decisions. So that's a great metaphor for therapy. And Harry Potter makes the opposite journey. I mean, he's filled with doubt along the way and a lot of anxieties, a lot of fears, but he grapples with them and he's got protective factors.
Mm-hmm.
You can work in resilience. I mean, he's got he's got adults that look out for him. He's got friends. He's mm-hmm. smart.
Yeah. I mean, those were the first two things that came to my mind when you think about Harry Potter's journey. And there's a lot of times he wants to do things on his own and he wants to protect others and leave them out of a situation. And his friends and the adults will not allow that to happen. And so there's really an emphasis upon friendship and connection and community. And I think also something that you have to have children as a protagonist in order to really kind of demonstrate this effectively, but having strong relationships with mentors and adults with kids that I think Harry Potter does a wonderful job with that in creating that type of relationship versus keeping children separate or having a whole world where it's just all about a fully mature mm-hmm. adult going through these struggles.
I hated when each kid had to be selected for a house. I hated it. It was like, here we are. I'm going to get picked last on the kickball team. I mean, it's like that whole thing triggered me. Like, okay, it's going through all those themes of middle school and relationships and love. And I mean, that part of it is just fantastic.
So as we wrap this up, I'm just curious from you all, when you think about Star Wars or when you think about Star Trek, these franchises, these universe to where we've seen a massive resurgence of them both here in recent times, what is your feeling about Harry Potter continuing to create and expand on the series and the world that it created? Because we definitely seem to be in a time and a period in pop culture where it's very difficult just to let things kind of have closure and just sort of be a stamp in our time versus recycling it back.
Too much money.
I tell you, my first reaction is Harry Potter is such a magnificent creation of one mind, Rowling. Mm-hmm. I mean, the detail, the depth of her storytelling that I can't imagine anyone else helming the franchise, whether that be books or movies, and it coming off the same way.
Right.
But never say never. I mean, right. Gene Roddenberry has, you know, rest in peace, but Star Trek chugs along. George Lucas is not involved nearly to the extent that he once was.
Not at all.
And in the right hands of people who care mm-hmm. and strike that balance of being true to the spirit of the original, but wanting to take, being brave enough to take it in a new direction. If you can strike that balance, then anything goes.
Well, let me ask you a question. Would you rather see a spinoff movie about the Weasley family or a Boba Fett creation story?
Oh, wow. I mean,
that's his Sophie's choice right there.
I would pick the Boba Fett story, but I would definitely watch the Weasley story.
Well, sure, but that's where I compare the two franchises. I'd want to know more in-depth stuff about various characters, Yoda, Han Solo, like these iconic type people, more than I'd want to know Hermione's story or Hermione's family. It doesn't bear the same weight for me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think you hit me with the Weasleys, but like if you give me Hermione, that would be a tougher choice for me.
Okay. Boba Fett versus Hermione versus Boba Fett growing up on the streets.
In Calcutta.
Come on, dude.
Can I tell you the story of why I fell in love with my wife?
Here it is. Absolutely.
Okay. So my wife and I were on our second date. And it was almost Halloween, and I was telling her that the previous Halloween, everyone in my house, we had a costume party, and I went as Darth Vader, one of my housemates went as Boba Fett, and we got in this big argument that night about who would win in a fight between Darth Vader and Boba Fett. And I couldn't believe anyone would pick Boba Fett in that scenario. So Jen is my wife, so I tell her, so what would you say about that? And here was her answer. She said, well, I mean, I think you got to go with Darth Vader because, you know, he does have the Force and the whole Empire. But Boba Fett, he was raised on the streets.
Right.
And that was it. I fell in love right then.
Well,
this woman gets me.
Right. So, any side story from Harry Potter
about Boba Fett
versus Boba Fett.
I think. Yeah. Okay. Dumbledore versus Boba Fett. I think I'd go with Dumbledore.
You would pick a movie. Okay. And you'd never, ever see a movie about Boba Fett. You would pick a story about Dumbledore being made. And never a Boba Fett movie, ever.
By a hair's margin, I would pick Dumbledore over Boba Fett.
Oh, man. You would regret that the minute that you'd be like, what have I done?
Okay, Yoda versus Dumbledore, I would pick Yoda.
Yeah, I'd pick Yoda. Yeah, sure.
We want to see a teen Yoda.
Right.
An angsty Yoda. He dyes his hair purple. Well, this is, I would say this is great stuff, but it definitely took a turn for the weird there at the end. But we're going to take a break, and when we're back, we're going to cover our doctor's orders. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Available now from Hero House Books, Cinemanalysis by Craig Pohlman and Josh Jensen. Cinemanalysis connects films to psychology through double features. These are movies paired because they share striking amounts of cinematic DNA, as if they were separated at birth. Each chapter describes a double feature, including why the movies can be appreciated more by viewing them together. Then psychological ideas are illustrated through the paired films. Pick up Cinemanalysis at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon.com.
We're going to wrap this up with our doctor's orders. These are things we're personally enjoying in pop culture. Frank, what do you got?
I have got the Netflix series Stranger Things, and it is amazing.
So you finally started it?
Yes. It's a freak show, the music, all of it. It's just ridiculous. And I don't know, what would you compare it to modern, like Twilight Zone, but...
Well, the way I've heard it described, and I think this is accurate.
You haven't seen it yet.
No, I have seen it. Okay. I've watched it. Yeah. Is that the kids in the it's an 8-episode series. The kids in it are in a Steven Spielberg film. Yeah. The parents are in a Stephen King film.
Yes.
And the teenagers are in a John Carpenter film.
That's right. Yeah.
And they all converge together. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. So watch it, binge it. It's all on Netflix right now.
And you can go online and see a shot by shot companion of all of the 80s scenes
awesome.
That they reference.
That.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Craig?
Well, my summer book is one that came out, I believe, last year, and the movie version is coming out, I believe, later this year, and that's The Girl on the Train.
Oh, wow.
It is blowing my mind. It is an absolute page-turner. It's got some similarities to Gone Girl in terms of structure and viewpoint, but it's also a unique take on things. It's really, really good.
That's awesome.
And my doctor's orders, just to echo with Frank, I was going to talk about Stranger Things, folks. It probably is probably the best thing I've watched this summer in film or television. So I highly recommend it. Well, that's going to do it for this Shrink Tank episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk or like us on Facebook by searching for a Shrink Tank podcast. And of course, check out all of our stuff on shrinktank.com, where you'll find articles about all kinds of cool things in pop culture, some by our very own Craig, Frank, and myself. Our engineer and audio wizard for today is Sean Beck. For Frank Gaskell, Craig Pullman, I'm Jonathan Hederle, and have a great week.